Radha-madhava Jaya Radha-madhava Kunja-bihari Radha-madhava Kunja-bihari
Jaya Vishnupai Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Ashutra Shutta Shri Shimana Sivahangre Srila Prabhupada Ki Gantara Ashram Bhagavatam Ki Gaur Pramanandi. All glories to the Sama devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Oh snap, you know I pray. Om Aknana Tamirandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Adati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Revacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 6 Chapter 5 Text 17 Pancha vimshati tatvanam purushodbhuta dharpana adhyatmam abhudhasyeha kimasat kamabhir bhavet jai Anjavim Shati Tattvanam Mothers, or I guess not. Word to word meaning Pancha Vimshati. 25. Tatvanam of the elements. Purusha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Adbhuta Dharpana, the wonderful manifester. Adhyatmam, the overseer of all causes and effects. Abhudhasya, of one who does not know. Iha, in this world. Kimasat kamarbhi bhavet. What can be the benefit of engaging in temporary fruitive activities? Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, Narada Muni has said that there is a house made of 25 elements. The Haryashvas understood this analogy. The Supreme Lord is a reservoir of all the 25 elements, and as a Supreme Being, the conductor of cause and effect, he causes their manifestation. If one engages in temporary fruitive activities not knowing that Supreme Person, what benefit will he derive? Purport. Philosophers and scientists conduct scholarly research to find the original cause, but they should do so scientifically, not whimsically or through fantastic theories. The science of the original cause is explained in various Vedic literatures. Atato brahmajignasa jamadhyasya yataha. The Vedanta Sutra explains that one should inquire about the Supreme Soul. Such inquiry about the Supreme is called brahmajignasa. The Absolute Truth, Tattva, is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 2, Verse 11. Vedanti tat tattvavidas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. Quote, learned transcendentalists who know the Absolute Truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. End of the quote. The Absolute Truth appears to neophytes as impersonal Brahman and to advanced mystic yogis as Paramatma, the Supersoul. But devotees who are further advanced understand the Absolute Truth as the Supreme Lord Vishnu. This material cosmic manifestation is an expansion of the energy of Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu. Ekadesha stitasyagnir Jyosna vistarini yata parasya brahmana shaktis tatedam akilam jagat. Quote, whatever we see in this world is but an expansion of various energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is like a fire that spreads illumination for a long distance, although it is situated in one place. That's the end of the quote from the Vishnu Purana. The entire cosmic manifestation is an expansion of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, if one does not conduct research to find the Supreme Cause, but instead falsely engages in frivolous temporary activities, what is the use of demanding recognition as an important scientist or philosopher? If one does not know the ultimate cause, what is the use of his scientific and philosophical research? The Purusha, the original person, Bhagavan, Vishnu, can be understood only by devotional service, bhaktyamam abhijanati, yavan yash chasmi tattutaha. Only by devotional service can one understand the Supreme Person who is behind everything. One must try to understand that the material elements are the separated, inferior energy of the Lord, and that the living entity is the Lord's spiritual energy. Whatever we experience, including matter and the spirit soul, the living force, is but a combination of two energies of Lord Vishnu, the inferior energy and the superior energy. One should seriously study the facts concerning creation, maintenance, and devastation, as well as the permanent place from which one never need return. Yat gatwa na nivartante. Human society should study this, but instead of cultivating such knowledge, people are attracted to temporary happiness and sense gratification, culminating in bottomless, topless passion. There is no profit in such activities. One must engage himself in the Krishna consciousness movement. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bottomless, topless passion. Okay, so Narada Muni in his riddle had described a house made of 25 elements. So this house refers to actually Lord Vishnu. That's what is being described here. But particularly refers to the expansion of Lord Vishnu as this material world. This material world is having 25 elements are there that comprise the material existence, 25 elements. So then you have the gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. These are called the Mahabhutas, the gross elements. Then you have the sense objects, which are their causes, right? For earth, you have smell, water, taste, fire, its form. Air is touch, and ether, sound. Huh? So smell, taste, form, touch, sound. These are sense objects, and these sense objects are the cause of the Mahabhutas, the gross elements that we perceive. So that together makes 10, right? Then you have these senses, which are meant for acquiring information about the material world. They're called as Ganendriyas, knowledge-acquiring senses. So those are 5. You have the nose for smell. You have the tongue for taste. You have the eyes for form. You have the skin and tactile sense for touch. And you have the ears for sound. So those are called as Ganendriyas. Now we have 15 elements. Then you have 5 working senses, which are meant for acquiring those sense objects. How agitating it would be if you could only know of the sense objects, but you couldn't pursue them. That would be like a real irritation to the mind. I suppose there one cake is there, but you couldn't walk toward it. How agitating it would be. So then you have 5 working senses meant for pursuing the sense objects. They're the voice. What is that? Voice, Bach is there, arms are there. Or usually the word that is used is grappling, but it refers to the arms, which are meant for grabbing things. The legs are there. Then you have the genitals and the... I was trying to see if there was a better word to use than anus. Anyway, so these are called as the 5 working senses for acquiring this. So now we have 20 elements. And then you have together, which is called as the antakarna. Antakarna means the internal sense organ. So it's conceived of as one, like, it's like the psychic element of our psychic means the psychological element of our existence. It's called as the antakarna. It deals with the aspect of what we might call as the inner life, the literally what's going on inside of us, but which is material, not spiritual. That is called as the antakarna, but it's divided into 4 parts: the mind, the intelligence, the ahankara, false ego, and also the chitta. Now, this word chitta is a little bit bewildering for me. I was trying to investigate before I came downstairs because I have been studying the Yoga Sutras, trying to understand Chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita better, because the goal of yoga is the cessation of the vrittis and the chitta vritti nirodha. So I was trying to understand what this meant. And so in the yoga philosophy, the chitta refers to manas, buddhi, ahankar taken together. But in our scheme of material universe, chitta gets its own position. And so I'm still somewhat unclear. Actually, the chitta is considered the manifestation of the mahatattva inside the living entity. So above the chitta, there is the mahatattva. The mahatattva is the first thing that comes out of the pradhan. Pradhan refers to the undifferentiated material energy. So if you think of, I've given this analogy before, if you think of the, like a mixing bowl. So that mixing bowl is pradhan. You have all the ingredients inside the mixing bowl, but nothing's happening. So that is called the balanced material energy. It's when all the modes of nature are in equilibrium. But then when Krishna glances at the mixing bowl, so that you can think of that glance like the spoon. Yeah? So then the spoon is the time factor, and it starts to mix everything up. And then when you start mixing everything up, things start coming out of that. That's to give an image. Or another way of thinking about it is like yogurt. And when you add some acidic substance to the yogurt, then it starts turning to other things. There are other sorts of permutations come out of it, right? Like, I don't know, what comes out of yogurt? Something. What comes out of yogurt? Butter, and so on. If you add an acidic element to it, you can get curd and other sorts of things. So similarly, you have this undifferentiated material energy that is called as pradhan. And then when things start mixing up, the first thing that comes out of pradhan is called as mahatattva. Now the mahatattva is represented in the individual entity as chitta. So I don't know exactly what that means. This is at least the scheme given by Kapiladeva in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. The mahatattva is represented in the living entity as chitta. So chitta is, so far what it seems to me, refers to the first interface for the soul to cognize the material world. means that the soul has awareness of the material world, but he cannot have direct awareness. His awareness of the material world is through the psychic elements of his conditioned nature. Does it make sense? So he gains cognition of the material world through manas, buddhi, ahankar. And in one sense, they're all the same, but they function in a different way to help us make sense of our material existence. Chitta seems to be like a more just generalized awareness of material existence. And then through manas, buddhi, and ahankar, it becomes more specific. Because in order to relate to the material energy, you need an ahankar. Without ahankar, you have no reference point by which you can relate to material existence. So you need a sense of I in order to make sense of the world that you're living in. Just like I was discussing this on the Sunday feast one time. Why is it that Matajis wear saris and Prabhus wear dhotis, for example? How come Prabhus don't wear saris? At least generally speaking, you know. See Prabhus wearing saris. How come you don't see Prabhus wearing saris? Because we have a sense of ahankar that does not facilitate that sort of interaction with the material world. So that even to make any sense of our material existence, you need some functioning ahankar. Anyway, for conditioned life, some ahankar is required. Then you have a mind that will perceive the information brought in by the senses, and then say, I like this one, I don't like that one. This is the function of the mind. And the function of the buddhi is to help the senses. This is what Kapila Dev says in the third canto. The function of the buddhi is to help the senses. Because just the senses contacting sense objects, it's just like the eye sees colors, shapes, and sounds. That's what the eye literally sees. Right? Our eyes literally see sounds, colors, and shapes. But that's not what you see. You actually recognize something as something, right? So you don't just see black in a particular side, you see a table. You take all that together and you see actually a table. So what is that function of our psychic element that allows us to see this as a table and not just like an undifferentiated sound, colors, and shape? That is what is called as buddhi. So Kapila Dev says, buddhi helps with the recognition of things in the material world. It helps you to recognize something as something. And by that recognition, then the mind you relate that recognition to your ahankar, your sense of identity. First, you recognize something as something, and then according to the type of false ego you have, you will accept it or reject it. The mind will tell you to accept it or reject it. So this is how the internal psychic body works for the conditioned soul. And so the word chitta seems to just be like a general awareness, which is made specified through these other aspects of the antakarna, the other aspects of the psychic body. Does that make sense? I was looking at it earlier. It's a little bit subtle. I have to do some research. Because also in the chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada calls this the Mahatattva as buddhi. It's referred to as tamasa buddhi. And that was always bewildering to me. So this is an aside point, but I'm wondering if it's like two types of buddhis. Because in the yoga scheme, the first element to come out of the Mahatattva or pradhan is buddhi. And so the Mahatattva was referred to as buddhi in the chapter 13 Bhagavad Gita. So I'm wondering if there's some relationship. Anyway, that's an aside point. But the point here is that you have a generalized chitta that allows you to be aware of the material existence. And through mind, intelligence, and false ego, things become specified by which you can make sense of your conditioned life, make sense of existence in this world. So this house of 25 elements is said to be Vishnu. That's what the verse says here. Pancha Vinshati Tattvanam, this house made of 25 elements, is the Purusha, is Vishnu. Vishnacharavati Thakur says, just like you will say, the stadium shouted. But when you say the stadium shouted, you mean the people in the stadium shouted. So in the same way, the Lord is identified with the house. Huh? You understand? Because how is the house of 25 elements the Supreme Lord? That doesn't make any sense. So I was trying to understand what is meant by that. Vishnacharavati Thakur says the owner of the house, in this case the Purusha, the Supreme Lord, is said to be the house. In the same way, someone may say that the stadium shouted. This is the example that he gives. The stadium shouted, but you mean the people in the stadium shouted. So the people are identified with the stadium. So he gives his example to describe how the Purusha is identified with the house made of 25 elements. This Purusha is called Abhuta Dharpana, which means he's a wonderful mirror. Actually, the word dharpana means a mirror. Cheto Darpana Marjana. The word Darpana means a mirror. So the Supreme Lord Vishnu, who is his house of 25 elements, is a wonderful mirror. Why is Vishnu a wonderful mirror? Because in an ordinary mirror, when you look into an ordinary mirror, your reflection comes, but you don't take up the qualities of the mirror. Of course, the mirror doesn't really have any qualities other than it can reflect. But Vishnu is called as a wonderful mirror because anyone who turns his attention towards Vishnu, then he will take up the qualities of that mirror. He will become Vishnu-like or God-like. In other words, just as we see this verse comes in the Upanishads, that there are two birds situated in the tree of the body. One bird is trying to enjoy the fruits of this body, that is a conditioned soul. And another bird is just absorbing, witnessing this other bird trying to enjoy. But if this one enjoying bird who is suffering the fruits of suffering and enjoyment, if he shall turn his attention towards this other bird who is witnessing him, then he will become free from lamentation and so on. You know this verse, it's Prabhupada quotes it twice in the chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita. So Vishnu is called an Ambuta Dharpana, a wonderful mirror, because by turning one's attention towards Vishnu, you will take up the qualities of Vishnu. You will reflect his qualities. So he is called as a wonderful mirror, because ordinary mirrors don't have this capacity. By turning towards Vishnu, you will take up his qualities, you will become Vishnu-like. And by becoming Vishnu-like, you can go to the abode of Vishnu. So he is called as an Ambuta Dharpana. And here, Adhyatma, he is the indwelling soul. Prabhupada is translated here, indwelling soul, who's the cause and effect of everything in this world. So everything we see in this world is caused by the indwelling soul, or the super soul, the Paramatma. So for one who does not know this Vishnu, this house of 25 elements, for one who does not know this Vishnu, then what is the use of his activities? The idea, again, expressed in this verse is that such activities leads to repeated birth and death. So what is the use of such activities? If you do so many activities, but you do not know Vishnu, then what is the use? So Prabhupada's purport is explaining about the Absolute Truth, that he has different features, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The Absolute Truth is one with three features. And according to what process you take up to understand the Absolute Truth, you will understand him in one of those particular features. Just like when you're eating prasad, or let's take prasadam, I've given this, Kapila Dev gives this example. When you have foodstuffs in front of you, according to which sense you use to understand it, you get a different understanding of that particular object, isn't it? So same example, cake is there. If you smell it, you get one sort of understanding, which is nice, certainly. And if you see it, you get another sort of understanding, but it's all connected. That is also nice to see. If you touch it, you get another sort of understanding, which is also pleasing. And if you taste it, that's like the supreme understanding, topmost understanding. So although you are with different senses, you're understanding the same object, but because you're using different senses to understand that object, you get a different understanding of that object. Understand? Does it make sense? So similarly, according to what path of yoga one takes to understand the Absolute Truth, he gets a different realization of the Absolute Truth. If he follows the path of Gyan, he realizes Brahman. If he follows the path of yoga, he realizes Paramatma. If he follows the path of bhakti, he can realize Bhagavan. So the verse is saying that, Prabhupada's expanding on this point, if you exist in this world, but you don't come to know the Supreme Lord through one of these paths of yoga, particularly through the path of bhakti, by which you can understand the Purusha, the enjoyer of this world, then what is the sense of what you're doing? Unless you come to understand the cause of your existence, by which understanding you can become free from your existence, then what is the use of all of our activities? It will simply amount to repeated birth and death. Of course, or as Prabhupada says here, it will culminate in bottomless and topless passion. And from there, repeated birth and death for, again, bottomless and topless passion in the form of an animal body or something like that. So this reminded me of a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. How are you to search out the Absolute Truth? Because Absolute Truth is that which is the cause of our existence. So how can you understand that which existed before you? Just like, how do we know that, how many people here believe that Gandhi existed and have some faith that there's a Gandhi? Anyone have faith Gandhi? How is it that you know Gandhi existed? He lived before we even existed as such in these bodies. So how is it that you can understand that there was a Gandhi? By hearing about him, huh? You can read something about him, and you believe that. Back of the Bhagavad Gita, you believe that. Huh? So you believe those things. There's no doubt, huh? So similarly, and it means that for things that existed before we existed, revelation is the only means by which you can really have contact with that. Revelation means someone has told you about it. Someone that you consider an authority has mentioned something about that reality. In other words, that which existed before we existed can only be known by disclosure. Right? That makes sense. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 10, verse 2, that even the great rishis and demigods, they cannot know me. Why? Because I existed before they existed. This is his particular point. And the nice thing about this is that Vishwanatharaya Thakur points out in his commentary there that, well, the reason the devotees can't know him is because they are absorbed in sense gratification. So people who are absorbed in sense gratification, of course they cannot know Vishnu. But then he gives the rishis also. The rishis are not absorbed in sense gratification. The rishis are absorbed in sadhana. Spiritual practice is meant for realizing the absolute truth, but they also cannot know the absolute. Why they cannot know the absolute? Because the absolute cannot be known except by disclosure. Understand? And what discloses Krishna? What discloses Krishna? Huh? Love. Bhakti. Only bhakti can disclose Krishna. Because this chapter 10 Bhagavad Gita, very interestingly, follows chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is continuing the theme that he started in chapter 9. The theme in chapter 9 is how, what is the theme in chapter 9? Devotional service, yes. Anyone could just guess that in and be right. It covers such a wide span of topics, huh? Yeah, it refers to Raja Vidya, which means bhakti, devotional service, is king of knowledge. And what is that king of knowledge, or that most confidential knowledge? That's what the chapter is called, most confidential knowledge, isn't it? Chapter 9 is called this? Most confidential knowledge? Okay. So what is that? What is confidential knowledge? Anyone knows what is confidential knowledge? Yes. Understanding the difference between body and soul. Then more confidential knowledge. Knowledge of the super soul. That's what we're hearing about here. That's called this. More confidential knowledge. And most confidential knowledge refers to what? Yes. It refers to the exchange of love that Krishna has with those who have bhakti. Understand? So this is the most confidential knowledge. So Krishna, in building up his case in chapter 9, he juxtaposes different persons who have a different sort of relationship with him and the different results of their different types of relationship with him. He speaks about those who... deride him because they think he's ordinary. So as a result of their relationship with him, their type of relationship, they go down. Mogasya Mogakarma no Mogaganavichitasa. He says all their hopes will be finished, all their knowledge will be finished, all their karma will be finished, everything will be finished. Rakshasha Masuram Chaiva, they'll become rakshasas and demons. And Mohinam Pakritamsha, they'll become bewildered by hypocrisy. So those who think have that sort of relationship, an inverse relationship with Krishna, then they become demons. They go down. Then there's another type of persons who worship Krishna by the Jnana Yajna. The Jnana Yajna. You remember this one? Jnana Yajna. So then they worship Krishna either as one with themselves or as manifested in many things, like a provisional pantheism, or as in the different forms of the demigods in nature, or in the different forms of the demigods. So from that type of worship, they can get liberation. This is described by our acharyas. Then there are others who worship him, the Mahatmas. They are under the influence of the Daivipakriti. So their mind knows no other. Bhajanti Ananya Manaso, their mind knows no other but Krishna. Now what is the result of their sort of worship? Does anyone recall the result of their sort of worship in chapter 9? The devotees worship who are under the influence of the Daivipakriti. Then it's mentioned, Satyatam Kirtanyan Tomam, is mentioned their activities, that they are always engaged in kirtan, they are endeavoring with great determination, following vows and the association of devotees. That is mentioned there. Anything, Nitya Yukta Upasas, they do this always. Any result you can recall? Any result you remember? Yoga Shema Vahamyaham. Huh? That's in chapter 10. Maybe some chapter 9. Yeah, Yogashima Vahamiham, they can conquer Krishna's heart so much so that he takes up the burden of taking care of them. But it's a burden of love. Yogashima Vahamiham. So then when expanding on that relationship, you have the last verses of Gita. However, Krishna says he's equal towards everything and everyone in the material world. But those who have bhakti towards him, he is conquered by that individual. Even if my devotee does most abominable activity, he is a sadhu, because he is determined to attain only me. And very quickly, he'll come to the righteous position, declare boldly that my devotee never perishes. And what to speak of my devotee, even a person who is not my devotee, but who takes shelter of my devotee, this is the Mamhi Yovya Pashrita verse, Yepi Shu Papayoni Yaha. They're born in sinful bodies, Papayoni. Everyone in Kali Yuga is called us Papayoni. They're born from sinful wombs, so we have sinful tendency. But even if they take shelter of my devotee, via Pashritya, then they can also attain the highest destination. Therefore, what to speak of the purified Brahmanas? And then finally, Krishna concludes, become my devotee. Right, so this is Krishna's his point in chapter 9. Now, continuing that point in chapter 10, indirectly, he speaks about how he cannot be known by anyone. After having glorified how the devotees know him and relate to him, in chapter 10, he opens up this whole topic how he cannot be known by anything. Because I'm the source of everything, therefore no one can know me. I'm the source of the material world. He gives a few verses describing the elements of the material world. And then finally, he says in text number 7, only those who have devotion to me, they can know me. And then the Chaturshloki Bhagavad Gita. So the idea here that Krishna is saying indirectly, what he said directly in chapter 9, he says indirectly in chapter 10. Indirectly means, what is it that reveals Krishna? It is devotion to Krishna that can reveal him. Nothing else has the power to reveal Krishna. Just like what reveals the sun in the daytime, the sunshine reveals the sun. So in the same way, bhakti can reveal Krishna. So therefore, if one, the filling of the verse in Prabhupada's quoting here, if one goes on through his whole life, but he doesn't develop bhakti for Vishnu, then what is the use of his life? Life is useless. Understand? This verse also comes in the outset of the teachings. What is that verse? 128, Bhagavatam. Shrame Vihi Kevalam. How does it start? Shrame Vihi Kevalam. Who knows? Any Bhagavatam? Vishwaksana Katu Suvyaha. Upariyat Yadi Rati. Whatever you are doing, if you do not develop rati, any bhakti for Krishna, then shrama eva hi kevalam. Definitely is a waste of time. Definitely you wasted your time. So similarly, if one goes through this whole life and you don't know that Vishnu, who's the source of everything, that Supreme Lord who's the source of everything, how can you know the source of everything? You can only know him by bhakti. So if you go through your whole life without developing bhakti, then you've wasted your human form of life. Kema sat kama birbavet. It is such a waste. And now, as a result of your wasting time, you get another body to continue wasting time. Until you are gained the merciful association of some devotee by which you can gain bhakti. I was actually thinking of another verse from chapter 15, Bhagavad Gita, but I'm going to stop here and see if there are any comments or questions. So,
the awareness. I've come to appreciate it as that layer, if you will, that allows for the soul. Since we're talking of conditioned nature for now, to contact all the other coverings. So the first covering is false ego, then the intelligence, mind, etc., all these coverings. But all these layers are material, and the soul is spiritual. So what, I'm going to use it as an adhesive for visual sake, what energizes all these material coverings is that consciousness, that cheta. Although we use the word consciousness, and in specifically it's a cheta, just as in an automobile, there is intelligence already there, There is the locomotor, the electricity, everything is there, or the apparatus is there, but unless it's the ignition by which all of it comes to life, because mind on its own cannot have desires because it's inert. Same with false ego and intelligence, etc. It's that activator, animator or activator that gives everything life, if you will. So the false ego will then convey, oh, you're such and such species, you're this body, this gender, etc., etc. And the mind and intelligence then fire accordingly. The intelligence is only according to this species of body one is in. Like, we don't have dog intelligence. Or do we? Although we hear in Bhagavad, dogish mentality. It's still human intelligence. If you're in human species, it's still canine or feline intelligence, depending on that. So that intelligence and mind are colored by or affected by the false ego. But it's that consciousness we call Cheta, which has the impure side in the material realm. So that's, and I'm sharing this to hear back from you.
Yeah, I'm so curious. So Cheta is a material element. It's a manifestation of the Mahatattva. The way it's described in the Sankhya of Kapiladeva in the Bhagavatam, it's like the localized Mahatattva inside an entity. So it's a material element. And all the material elements are, let's say, come to life or appear alive as such because of the influence of the conscious entity who's behind it. So it still doesn't perfectly clarify, although it seems like a little clearer as you were describing it. But what is Mahatattva? So what is the Mahatattva exactly? And how does it, obviously it's something that allows for the, as you were saying, an adhesive that allows for the interaction. I also was trying to describe it like that. That gives the, because the soul cannot cognize the material world directly. So then the Mahatattva is the first layer which allows for the cognition of the material world. That's how I was kind of...
For me, perhaps a little biological example, because we're talking of creation here. When we talk of a womb, right? The material world is considered like a womb in which the living entities are placed for gestation. So womb exists, but it's not active, or uterus, it's not active unless there is contact by the creative potency. So it's that inert womb which is there, and once there is contact, everything else starts to begin, in the sense that the same tissues, the blood, whatever is necessary, it starts putting together a child or an embryo. Until then, it is there. It's just not activated. That's how I...
Yeah, that's clear. That's like the macrocosm of Mahatattva. But the localized Mahatattva is called as Chitta. So the Chitta is also an inert material element. So that still is not clarified exactly.
When the embryo is in the womb, because of the presence of the soul, all the body is manifesting,
right?
In different
right.
Canto 3 described. But actual awareness doesn't happen till the third trimester. So he's aware, or he's conscious, but not aware.
Mm-hmm.
It's that distinction between being conscious, but not aware.
Yes.
Like a person in coma. Is conscious but not aware. We use the word unconscious. There's a conscious.
Right.
In the sense, the Bhagavad Gita language, there is consciousness because there is presence of soul, but not aware. So we also use English language. Bhakti
Mata
Thakur warns us that language has its limitations. But we see in our day-to-day lives the subtle distinctions between being conscious, being aware, and from being aware there is being cognitive. Because there are many elements or living entities that are aware but not cognitive. Because the intelligence has to work, like a tree is aware. Like if you, when the weather changes, it expresses it. But it's not cognitive, we can't speak to it for it to speak back. I'm sure it'd like to say many things to us, but it's like that.
That was a little clearer, and that was close to what I was trying to describe also, that you were making the same thing. It's conscious but not aware. So it is a chitta that allows for awareness of things. So that's what I was also trying to express. It seems like the first interface for the soul and his cognizing anything in this material world through ahankara, manas, and buddhi. Anyways, definitely it's something I'm going to research more because, yeah, this it's a little subtle. Advaita Charan, okay. The Srinadapi.
There is, you said that consciousness is material.
No, not consciousness is material. The chitta is material. It's a material element. It's the localized mahatattva and the psychic body of the conditioned soul. The shukshma sharira, sometimes called.
Yeah, that's what
it is
also.
No, it's not spiritual. So that's why we need to. I'll show you what I'm studying from. I looked. Yeah. This chit is chitta and chit are not the same thing. So that's chitta and chit are not the same thing. Chit we generally refers to knowledge of the soul that's inherent in the soul. Chitta refers to a material element that's part of the psychic body of the conditioned soul. So it's different. Like I said, in the yoga philosophy, the word chitta means ahankara, manas, buddhi taken together. It's called chitta. That's how it's described in the yoga sutras. And our scheme given by Kapila Dev and Third Canto is described in a little different way. It's described as the localized mahatattva. So mahatattva is a material element, so chitta is also a material element. But it seems that it's that which is going to allow the soul to begin to interact with material nature. So like I said, I'm not perfectly expressing it because I'm not perfectly clear about it. So I would do some.
But what exists at the microcosmic level?
Yes.
Exists at the...
That's right. That's right.
Same things that are...
That's right. That's right.
Yeah,
you can speak.
Yeah, chitta, he refers to as the contaminated consciousness, dushit.
Yeah.
Which he says, which when coming in contact with the holy name, you know, can be purified.
Yes.
So that's ringing in my head, basically.
Yeah. See, this is why this is why I read the Yoga Sutras actually, because it goes into a lot of details with this mind stuff, which was for me intriguing in reading chapter 6 Bhagavad Gita. Also in yoga philosophy, which is very similar, except Patanjali doesn't speak about God directly. He does glorify Ishvara as the only person who can give samadhi, which is the goal of yoga. So he was definitely a theist, but his book was more like for like a bridge program, so to speak. Okay. So then there also, when the soul, basically what the chitta will do is the consciousness, the chitta sometimes described as like a mirror also. And what happens is the consciousness will hit that mirror and reflect back to the purusha something. So when the chitta is contaminated, it reflects back to the purusha, the soul, you know, all the contaminated information that I'm this body, etc. But then through rising up through the modes of nature, particularly the very high modes of goodness, then chitta becomes completely purified. It's like cleaning the mirror of all the dirt, very similar to our chitta dharpana marjana sort of idea. So that way, when the chitta hits that clean mirror, it reflects back the purusha. So he begins to have understanding of himself as different from matter. But he's still having that cognition based on his purified chitta. He's not completely free from the material existence. So the concept in Christian consciousness is that we will also gain perception of the absolute reality without any help of any of the material elements, a direct perception of the absolute from the soul platform and not from the platform of a purified chitta. This is what makes bhakti distinct from these other processes. These other processes are not completely transcendental because they still have they have high realizations of the absolute, but through a purified inner organ. Whereas bhakti is considered to have cognition of the Absolute Truth directly, without any help of these material elements. So I think it's something that could be investigated a little bit more carefully. Yeah. 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 Yes.
And what is that contact point where that spiritual, we can't say becomes, but manifests as material?
Yes.
Like in Prabhupada gives the example of how the skin at the fingertip grows in a particular way, and there's also a nail which is different from the finger and the skin there. But it's all coming from where the cuticles are. At what point in time does that become a nail?
Yeah, these are good questions. Definitely worth investigating. Because I was fascinated. I was studying it this morning, and before I came downstairs, I only had a half hour to look at Kapila Dev's scan. I was trying to understand, looking at his scheme. So I'll do some more research and send a few mails out. Yeah, you wanna. Yes. Sometimes they are, but like in Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, when Krishna is speaking about the interactions, and he speaks about the psychic body there, he also uses the word chaitana, but which doesn't refer to the consciousness of the soul, though. It refers to an interaction of the psychic body. And I was just looking at this last night as I was studying it. So sometimes they are used interchangeably, and I think that's where the confusion is coming up. But they're not exactly the same thing. Yeah, that's right. Or sometimes the word Atma even. Atma can refer to God, the soul, the body, the mind. So then you have to look at the context in which it's being used to gain perfect clarity. So also with this word Chaitana, which can generally just mean consciousness, as it is described also in Bhagavad Gita and Prabhupada's translation. But it doesn't refer to the consciousness of the soul directly. It's referring to the interaction of the material body, the kshetra, the field of knowledge, not the kshetra gathered when Krishna's describing it. Then you can check it out. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Has its material and spiritual counterpart, right?
Sure.
There's a spiritual intelligence, there is a material intelligence. Similarly, sure. Consciousness, there is contaminated consciousness.
Sure.
And there is pure consciousness.
Sure.
Right. So.
Bhartha referred to?
It was Buddhi only.
Buddhi. Yes. So that makes perfect sense. But then is that what's being talked about here? Like in verse 6, 7, chapter 13, where Krishna's describing, he says, this is to be the field of activities, which refers to the material body, gross and psychic. And so he mentions chaitana as one of those things. So there's that's not the same sense that here it's something different. That's what, it's a, yes. So anyway, we'll do a little research because it's good to have some topics that confuse everyone. It is good. That means that it makes you want to understand better properly. Otherwise, we are thinking that we already got it down tight. And then someone throws in a curveball and then you find that you can't actually explain it. And then when you find that you can't actually explain it, that means you find out that you don't really know it. And so you have to actually research it and see. Yeah, it's a good chance to help us out here. Yeah, Dwayne Charan Prabhu, you went to. He made sure to stay close to the mic this time.
Just two things that I'd heard which are relevant and I just wanted to understand them better. One was that the yoga process has 9 stages, 4 are material, 4 are spiritual. And
what path?
Yoga process or yoga path, like the elevation of...
8 stages.
8 stages?
8 stages.
Okay.
Ashtanga. Ashtanga.
Right. I guess not from that definition. So Nityananda Prabhu from Dallas, he was explaining that there's like sense object, senses, mind, intelligence, false ego, like that. And then this consciousness, which is intermediate, it can be material or spiritual. And then there are four spiritual, Atma, Atma, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagwan, like that, he was explaining.
Yeah, I don't know what scheme he's quoting from.
But he was basically saying that the consciousness can be either material or spiritual based on where it's taking shelter. So
that doesn't clarify the topic. We understand that when consciousness identifies with matter, then the consciousness becomes contaminated. So that is a very clear thing. That's not clarifying what this chitta is, though. Okay. Exactly. All it's saying, what that conveys the idea is that the chitta is actually consciousness, which is originally pure. But because of contact with material nature, it becomes contaminated. That's a different sense than this chitta, which is being described as a function of the psychic body, the chaitra, not the chaitragya. So that's why that doesn't clarify the point.
So it's basically consciousness is there, even in the spiritual world, everyone is conscious, but by being affected by the material modes, it's contaminated. That's what
it's... Yeah, it's by identification with the material body. One aspect of the material body being the chitta, the chaitana.
Okay, and the other thing was that I heard before that the soul interacts with matter. The interface is usually the super soul. The super soul facilitates
interaction. Yes, the super soul is that which facilitates the souls being able to do anything in matter. But the first, when we were using the word interface, we weren't using it in the same way as the super soul, which is allowing that connection. But the idea is that the soul cannot cognize anything in this material world directly. His cognition is through a psychic body, the antarkarana. That's how we make sense of the material world, is through our psychic body. And which the most subtle of all these elements seems to be, what seems to be the chitta or the mahatattva. That's the most subtle aspect of our psychic body which allows us to cognize the material world. But again, we'll take that tentatively because we got to do some research on it, apparently. But Mataji had a question, and then we're going to end class.
I guess it's on the same topic. It's, you were making mention that bhakti yoga is directly dealing with the soul. So the soul is like... That's the cognition, the direct cognition of bhakti yoga is dealing with the soul, contrast to the chitta, which is like a process or something. You were talking about it having to be cleansed before it becomes pure.
Yes.
So is that what Prabhupada was talking about when he was saying there's a step-by-step process like jnana yoga? Is that like the cleansing of the chitta?
Yes, that's how these processes describe themselves. I'm not like expert on these processes, but I just finished this thick book on the Yoga Sutras. It's written by a devotee, actually. But that's what it is. And we hear this in Kapiladeva's teachings also. Gyan yoga, karma yoga, gyan yoga, ashtanga yoga, they're not transcendental processes. Krishna says in the Bhagavatam 11th canto that he came to establish bhakti yoga because it's nirguna. It's the only process that is transcendental to the modes of material nature. Therefore, in chapter 14 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks of the process of bhakti for jumping over the modes of material nature or transcending them. So bhakti is the only process that's considered to be fully transcendental, whereas these other processes are highly in the higher modes of nature. So therefore, you have like in these higher planetary systems, which are influenced by very high degrees of modal goodness, they're living like yogis, and Ganis who are sitting there and just meditating in those realms. But they're not transcendental. Although they're yogis and they're meditating on the Supreme Lord, they're not transcendental to the material world. So there's a distinction that's there, definitely. There seems to be a similarity between what the idea of what those processes convey and the Chaito Darpanam Marginam idea of Mahaprabhu, what he says in the beginning. Again, I kind of glossed it, so I have to go back and do some research. You want to say something?
Hare Krishna. Thanks for the very interesting discussion. I was wondering, the verse in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna gives the analogy about the fire covered by smoke, and the mirror covered by dust, and the embryo covered by the womb. I was wondering how relevant that would be to the, is that like kind of what you're discussing, is this thing that's covering the consciousness, but covering is a difficult, anyway, it's clearly a difficult thing to directly understand. So I was thinking of one analogy, and maybe you could let me know if it seems to be helpful or on the point. But like there are audio players that they have a maximum volume potential. And then there are certain manufacturers that they put a volume limit on the device that you can deactivate, but the limit prevents the volume from going above a certain point. So I'm wondering if like one could understand the citta as that function that limits the expressive potential of the living entity, confines him to a certain degree, and then gradually can be adjusted more and more and more, and then until finally it's removed completely.
Yes, the answer is yes. The citta is described like that, at least, and the yoga philosophy, it is described in this way. So the citta, and this makes sense, the subtle body can contract and expand according to the type of body that it gets. So the citta also, being part of the subtle body, can contract and expand. That still doesn't answer the question exactly that we're trying to figure out, between the difference between consciousness and the citta exactly, which is the point of specific consideration.
My point, I guess, was that the citta would be an additional function that confines, that restricts, that
it's not exactly described that way. So okay. It's something that we should investigate instead of trying to guess.
No, that's what I'm not. I'm just presenting this so you can comment and correct.
I'm saying I won't be able to do so without further investigation. I need to investigate the topic. That's what I'm saying, to gain perfect clarity before I try to give any sort of further answer on it. So it's something that we can look up. Third Canto Bhagavatam, Kapila Devi Sisi, I think it's chapter 26. So everyone can start doing a little research project and see if they can figure it out. And then we can report tomorrow in class or whenever, huh? Yes.
By their functions.
Right. Okay.
And you said that citta is the most subtle.
That's right.
And then you go down.
So you Jitendra Prabhu, and then we got everyone. Now everyone's getting fired up. let me get a comment in, please.
Chitto and chetu, same word, right?
Was Chaito
Dharpana Marjana?
Yeah.
Okay.
It seems like that, so we have to investigate. Because Chaito Dharpana Marjana.
Yeah.
So is it the Chitta Dharpana? Is that what it is? The cleaning on the
Chaito.
Mirror, the Chitta.
I saw Chaito.
I read an essay of Dhanudhara Swami, and he was also comparing Chaito Dharpana Marjana to this yoga thing. Anyway, some work has to be done, obviously. That's going to be my bottom line here.
It says that we're made in Krishna's image. So am I to understand? Krishna doesn't touch material manifestation. He doesn't touch matter. So does the citta enable us to conceive the matter, like to touch it? Because we're like
that's
Krishna?
How we were describing it today. It's part of the psychic body that allows for our making sense of the material existence. Yes. Acharya, initially, you want to get in your little comment?
It is nice that it's a research project, but this is not for everyone to go research. So please do not go pick this book, this author, that author, and do your research.
No.
He's studying it. No need to recreate the wheel. When he's ready, he'll explain it if he understands it. And if you understand it, we'll accept it. Others will go for prasadam. Please do not engage into a whole research. 20 people don't.
Research means
discussion is okay.
Third canto Bhagavad Gita.
Exactly. So thank you. Don't run around looking for books on chitta.
Acharya Nishaprabhu.
Just wondering what you think Prabhupada's referring to when he says temporary happiness and sense gratification culminating in bottomless, topless passion.
Say it again? I mean, it's obvious. Yeah.
The indicated, the message that we're getting, you think is the obvious meaning? Or I'm just wondering what Prabhupada could
say. It again? I'm not looking. Yeah,
I
heard that part, the whole sentence.
It says, human society should study this, but instead of culturing such knowledge, people are attracted to temporary happiness and sense gratification, culminating in bottomless, topless passion.
Yeah, the result of lack of spiritual inquiry is being moved by the modes of material nature. So according to the modes of nature, in the Kali Yuga context, it means a lot of passion and ignorance. So Prabhupada says in the chapter 14, I think, passion. He says passion means a man is attracted to a woman and a woman is attracted to a man. This is called the mode of passion. That's how he describes passion. So the lack of spiritual investigation, which causes the influence of the mode of goodness to become prominent, is that the mode of tamagun, rajagun take over. And as a result of an influence of the mode of passion, bottomless, topless passion. As I say, either in human bodies or in animal bodies, which are also bottomless and topless, you know, you continue on in this way. So the consequence of lack of tattva jignasa is severe. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.
Who's here? Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Thank you. Do you take all of them or just some? I took them sometime.